It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So I've been saying this for a while, but I really broke my YouTube algorithm. Like,
what's it sending you now?
The other day, in its recommended things, there were two completely unrelated videos whose titles included the term woke in them.
Okay.
Nobody puts that title in their video, and yes, unless they are very opposed to things being woke.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think that's accurate.
And that is not what I want in my feed. And I do not understand how I got there. And there's something else today that had kind of an innocuous title, but based on what I was seeing in the thumbnail and that, it leads me to believe it was another sort of social right-wing criticism. And I'm like, how did these get here? I mean, to say nothing of the fact that the stuff that is there that's not like that is mostly not stuff I enjoy. It's just a mess. But yeah, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh man, I have broken something. And I don't watch videos like to hate watch them in general. I watch videos to genuinely like that. Sometimes those videos are hate watching other videos. I will watch videos where somebody I agree with makes fun of somebody I don't agree with. But I don't watch videos of people who I don't agree with. Because I watch it for entertainment. I mostly watch video game stuff these days.
I wonder if it confuses the algorithm when you do that. So you're watching a video criticizing someone you don't agree with. That video is going to contain a lot of footage from that person's video. And maybe, you know, would somehow that person you don't agree with be tagged or be part of the SEO of the video?
Well, and you can, well, this has happened, but it doesn't happen like that. What happens is I like this person's video. So YouTube thinks maybe you'd be interested in watching a shithead trash the person whose video you like. I watched, there was a time period where I was on a big push of Hannah Gadsby videos. And so YouTube was super convinced I would want to hear Joe Rogan's take on Hannah Gadsby. And I'm like, no, I would not. And this is the thing I don't like with YouTube. There's a dislike function, whatever, for individual videos. I want something that I can tell it, I am never going to watch anything from this channel. Because there's an opposite to say, I like this channel, you subscribe to it. I want something where I essentially can block a channel. And not because it's offensive or anything like that, but I'm just like, it took so long to convince YouTube I was not interested in Joe Rogan. It took a very long time. And then one person sent me one video they thought was funny and I watched it, and suddenly YouTube was like, oh, you're into Joe. I'm not. Stop it. I don't know why you're laughing, punk. You're the one who sent the video.
I know. That's why I'm laughing.
But.
And it was funny, but I didn't know you had kind of a, I didn't know you had any kind of issues with Joe Rogan. I don't feel one way or the other about him, but.
Yeah, I feel very, very strongly about it.
Well, that's fair.
Actually, this eyebrow is desperately wanting to go up when you say you don't feel one way or the other about him. I'm like, are you familiar with him at fucking all?
I mean, I don't know if I am that.
He has a great deal of power and influence that he wields with his eyes closed. So bad. It's like if a YouTube influencer got really into politics and was really had really shitty takes on it. In fact, it's almost exactly what it is.
This was just a little animated thing that I got somehow, and I just thought it was funny.
And YouTube has ruined it. No, Trish has the thing. She knows now, because I used to get annoyed when she wants me to watch a video. She knows, she's like, you need to log out for this one, because I want you to see this, but you're not going to want YouTube to think this is the kind of thing you're into. And it's usually not like offensive, but like YouTube spent a long time thinking I really wanted to know how to make jelly roll quilts. And if you don't know what those are, that's fine. It's a kind of quilt, which I'm not interested in watching videos on how to make. So she knows sometimes she's like, you should probably log out for this one.
So I read this really long article, way too long, by a person with an actual PhD. And they were talking about this. It was in the Atlantic or something. And they were talking about how what happened in our culture, what's made everything go south. And you can trace certain things starting to get bad in the early 2000s when this thing happened. And that is when we had internet media that we now call social media, and it started to use the like button and the share button. As soon as people could like and share, all this stuff started happening. And people started interacting with each other in the internet in completely new and different ways.
And I think that's when I hurt my back. They might be onto something.
This was such a long article that seemed to me to be so wrong about everything. It was like, look, I've been using the internet since 1987. And I can promise you, we had ways to share and like things. Maybe they weren't share buttons and like buttons, but we were sharing and liking things. And here's something else I can tell you, is that everybody I knew, everybody, and this was a lot of people who were using the internet, would talk about having
a lot of people
this particular problem. And that is, because of how online interaction has always worked, as far as I know and my cohort knows, when you sit down, you send a message, there's no reason. It's not like sending a letter through the mail where you don't know how long it's going to take for the postal carrier to take it where it's going. You don't know how long it's going to take for the person who got the letter to have enough time to sit down and write something in response. So you generally don't even think about when you're going to get a response. But in online communication, whether it's an email, whether it's text, you know, in just about any online type of communication you can imagine that hasn't been invented yet, it's going to be the same. Once you send that message out, you have, it's reasonable for you to think that that person is going to see it right away and answer right away. So you're going to have an incentive to stay online and wait for it to happen, because it could be happening at any time.
And dopamine.
Most people who've used the internet since whenever are very familiar with the problem of you get online, you're doing stuff, and you don't want to leave because you've sent a whole bunch of stuff out there and you're waiting for people to like it or share it or in somehow affirm what you've done is whatever. And it's really hard to leave online. In fact, online addiction was a thing that some of the people we knew really had a problem with, because they couldn't get up and leave. They couldn't go to their jobs, or they couldn't go to the bathroom or eat a meal. They were stuck there. And that's what this guy was talking about. He was talking about like buttons and share buttons being a thing that keep people so engaged that they get addicted to it.
Yeah, obviously there's a much broader concept that it has a point, but to specify it that way is ridiculous.
Well, and he didn't mention the one thing that's different between the experience I'm describing and the way people experience it now, that's probably the real cause of the problems, and that is
emojis.
They're carrying the thing with them wherever they go. See, I had to leave my computer to go to work. I had to leave my computer to go do things. I was experiencing all the same addictive stuff that people do now, but if I was going to live a life, I had to leave it at home for long periods of time. And I could only get online at certain points, and it didn't matter how much I wanted to stay there. And believe me, I did. Everybody did. You had to walk away from it. What the big revolution was that people started carrying their computers with them. That's the big change. It's not like buttons and
like share, and share buttons. Didn't ruin everything. William's here to tell you it's smartphones. Smartphones ruin society.
I'm saying that they made it harder. The impulses that people are following have been around since the beginning of the internet. That's not new. It's that they have the phone, they have the thing with them now when they go to work or when they're sitting at the table or whatever. So if I know it was really hard for me to tear myself away from the internet in 1987, I understand what it's like for someone who's got the internet with them all the time and they don't have to tear themselves away from it. And that's a problem.
I want to say something supportive of your statement and also true. So I have to word this very carefully. I agree that the portability of social media and those things is definitely a contributing factor to the larger difficulty that is being described here.
I
you don't see it. No, this is another one of those things where you talk about how you were so shocked that people were so confused about Game of Thrones. And I have to tell you, you know, you sound kind of condescending. You made it sound like you genuinely sound like you're saying, no, it's not like and share. It's smartphones. Smartphones are what brought down our, you sound like you're not telling, saying it's ridiculous to pick a specific thing. It sounds like you're just saying, no, that's not the specific thing. This is the specific thing. And I know that's not what you mean, but that's what it sounds like.
That isn't what I mean. But I am saying, though, what I think was ridiculous was that this person, again, you know, this is a PhD in social sciences, pages and pages in a prestigious magazine, and he didn't even mention the fact that we're carrying computers around with us. I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge deal. Didn't even mention it, but mentioned these other things that...
Because it muddies the signal. We're trying to get attention. It's trying to get engagement. He's not trying to educate. You and I talked about this over pancakes.
I know,
this
but
the publisher perish, clickbait, all that.
This is a person putting forth his credentials as a scientist, presumably telling us something that's scientifically figured out, explored and examined and tested and everything else. And it's none of those things. He's just pulling this out of the air without, I don't think, giving it adequate thought. And many of the things that he was talking about did relate to the portability of the technology, but you're right.
Said he didn't mention that.
He didn't. I'm saying that the list of problems that he forth, some of them you can say, yeah, that's probably related highly to the portability of the whatever. I do not blame the portability of the technology for everything or whatever. You're right. I don't do that. But many of the things he listed would trace to that rather than what he was tracing
and
it
it's,
to.
And it's without a doubt a factor. Being able to be online all the time is a huge factor.
But there was hyperbole in what he was saying. You're right about how, this is when it all went, everything went to pot. It's like, no, that's ridiculous.
And some of that is a weird outlook, and some of that is, it'll be a way more impactful article that way in terms of eyeballs and things. People will have a lot more to say about that article than if it had been well-reasoned and demure in its conclusions.
But you're right. I should be clear. I don't typically blame a technology for something. I mean, technologies are just tools. I think this innovation with the technology has facilitated certain things, but the problems that lead to people using a technology a certain way have not, the technology didn't cause that. The issues, you know, the other issues outside of it cause that. And they're just using the technology as a way to get to it.
Particular technological invention that has caused the downfall of society. And everything has gone to shit since then. And it's the inclined plane. Since the invention of that machine, oh my God, everything has gone downhill. Oh my God. I didn't do that on purpose. I didn't do that on purpose, but I'm so proud.
The devil's simple machine.
It's so rare to invent a dad joke out of whole cloth, but I'm pretty sure I just did it.
Yeah, I think you did.
Oh, let's end the episode. That is, I can live off of that for a long time. Oh, ever since then, it's all gone downhill. Oh, I love that so much. Oh, I'm super genius.
You actually make a good point, though. I think one of the reasons why he made the argument he made was he was trying very hard to blame the technology. I mean, I think a lot of people want to think that the internet
is a thing. Well, yeah. And they want a thing is the important thing. Is every, like, anybody who's like, society's gone to hell. You can't be like, you know what? Society's gone to hell for a very complex, nuanced, and ultimately unknowable series of different things just blind luck. That's not a fun rant. You have to be, everything's gone to hell because Justin Bieber got a tattoo.
Well, and the dead giveaway is at some point in the article, he starts talking about how, well, since we know this, we can start regulating the internet and this, that, or the other way. I was like, oh my gosh, no, that's not going to do anything. In fact, it's going to step, you know, it would, some of those things would never hold up in court because they challenge free speech. This is stupid, ridiculous.
But again, the realistic and more nuanced and more holistic article would only be read by you.
Or written
and
by
maybe like two
matter.
Of our listeners. So that dude would get big ups on this podcast. Though to be fair, he's gotten a lot of attention on this podcast by doing a shit job also.
But you're right. We're
not going to name him.
I have to be careful about how I talk about these things or I'm going to end up sounding the same way, just like you said. I certainly was not
especially
blaming.
Because I try and manipulate things to make you sound that way because I find it funny. Yeah, also, I think we're at the point where we have to stop calling The Atlantic a prestigious publication, because anytime I hear about an article from The Atlantic, it is an absolute crapshoot if it's a well-reasoned, interesting, educational article, or it's a goddamn glorified BuzzFeed quiz. Like, they make the most articles. They make the fewest articles that are middle of the road. They either make amazing shit or absolute dog crap articles.
The truth is, I think portable internet computers or whatever, I think that's great. I think it's potentially great. It's potentially got a lot of positive social implications. I don't think it's the technology's fault when people, you know, that's another thing people want to blame media for, is that, well, it's making people get addicted, it's driving people to do certain things. And I don't think you can support that with human behavioral science, good human behavioral science research or theory. I mean, you can support the idea of internet addiction and general addiction research and stuff, but addiction doesn't affect everybody or I mean, it's kind of like, people get addicted?
Not a thing to be eliminated.
Right. It's people get addicted.
Treatment of addiction is the issue. It's not. Like, so stop blaming things for addiction and figure out how to work with addiction.
Right. People get addicted to gambling. People get addicted to gambling, and only a small group of people think you should get rid of gambling because of that. Most people think
also,
no, the problem is not gambling. It's people getting addicted to gambling.
And also, if you got rid of all legal gambling, gambling would definitely not stop, as evidenced by the fact that there's plenty of legal gambling. And plenty of illegal gambling.
Well, and the drug war is another thing. It's like, the fact of the matter is, a lot of people use drugs, even drugs that people think are really scary, like heroin, and they're fine. They're, you know, just about everything you can think of that people could get addicted to, that it's scary to you that's true. Not everybody gets addicted to it. In fact, only a small group do. And usually the addiction isn't just about that thing. It's about other issues they have that they're using the thing to deal with. So, you know, we can't just go around blaming the tools or the means people use to get to a place for the problem when it's much, much bigger than that.
Society really went to hell when you started being able to smoke heroin with your phone. So Do you know what I actually think of anytime I hear about the Atlantic now?
No.
There was a TV show. It was a musical comedy called My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, or called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Terrible title for the show, but it was actually a pretty good show. And there was one musical number called A Fuck Ton of Cats. And it was a musical number about a woman who basically was decided she was going to become a crazy cat lady, was sort of the joke in it. And so she's singing about, I'm going to get a fuck ton of cats. And there's a point in the video where she goes into a pet store and there's a bunch of cat puppets in, like, it's a pet store, but they're all puppets and they sing along with her and stuff. And there's a particular line or couple of lines that I get stuck in my head regularly where she sings, there's a lot of scientific evidence that there's an organism in cat poop that makes you crazy. And the cats sing back, yes, we read that article in the Atlantic. And then there's a pause and they say, and then we peed on the Atlantic. And I sing that through my head a lot. So anytime anybody's like, I read this thing in the Atlantic, and I'm like, yes, we read that article in the Atlantic. And then we peed on the Atlantic. And it's all these little cat puppets. It's adorable.
I don't know.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Cat Podcast. The only podcast to tell you the truth about when society got ruined was with the invention of the in-kind plane. Because ever since then, everything has gone downhill. Oh, I will never do anything in my life better than that. Spread the word, my children. Tell everybody that joke. It will be my legacy. Fuck 12 years of a podcast. Fuck 20 some odd years of a happy, committed relationship. That joke does it. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 593. Bless you. Moral panics. That's my problem. I'm tired of moral panics.
Yes. Yes.
Gosh.
There's a really good podcast about that called You're Wrong About. And it started off as a podcast that was about like moments in history that we all know, but we don't know the details really accurately. And we assume a lot of things that aren't true. And it has very slowly slipped into specific incidents of moral panic and sort of unveiling the reality behind it. It's kind of cool. A little heavy for me, but Trish has made me listen to episodes and it's kind of good. Just check that out. For those of you just joining us, we recorded one last week that was also right now. So listen to that one first and understand how it works, or just catch on. So while I am partying up in Virginia Beach, just being wild and out, I don't know what that means. I think it was a TV show. Just partying like it's 1999, just living like we're dying, dancing like nobody's watching, taking a pill in Ibiza to show Avicii I was cool. Just do it, wake up and do it all again. What are you going to be up to? I don't understand partying. I just was doing my best. What are you going to be doing this coming week while I'm hanging out with my family and mostly reading?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, earlier today, which is going to be like a long time,
a week and a half ago,
to the listeners, there were some phone calls I had and some emails exchanged, and I don't know if I told you, but so some time ago I was eating, I'm sure I talked about this on the podcast. I was eating some,
I don't know that you did. You did talk to me about it. I'm not sure you did talk about it on the podcast.
Eating some beans that had been made from dry, you know, and sometimes there are gonna be rocks in there. Didn't get all the rocks out. So my molar, I still have my wisdom teeth, so the molar that's just before the wisdom tooth cracked, and I had to get a crown. And this was a few years ago, but now a few weeks ago, I was eating something and the crown popped off. I still have it in the bag out there. I guess I'll take it in and see if, I don't know, they can put it back. But for a few weeks, and the reason it's been a few weeks is because just about as soon as it happened, my dentist was going to be out of town. Now, I could have probably seen a different dentist, but there's no pain or sensitivity or anything, as long as I like eat on this side of my mouth or whatever. But so for several weeks, I've just had this, I can feel where the tooth has been smoothed off and down where the crown's supposed to go. And there's a little bit of enamel that sticks up and is sharp that'll actually kind of cut into my tongue if I put it over there too much. But anyway.
So when you're getting frustrated, that's how you come. You're like,
finally, after like 3 weeks, this week I'm supposed to go in. Right. Just it's for you and I right now, it's tomorrow, but it's gonna be a week and a half ago. Now
I think you should have stuck like a Tootsie Roll up there just to cover it.
Last time I got the crown done, I had to go in twice. You go in once for them to, I don't know what order, I don't know what they do.
Point and laugh.
And then the next time they actually do the stuff. And I wonder if that'll happen this time where I'll only be in there for like 20 minutes and then they'll schedule me for something else. So it could be that while you're doing all that stuff, I'm at the dentist getting my tooth fixed.
My wife also cracked a tooth while eating beans that had been reconstituted from dry and had a rock left in them in the game Oregon Trail. Other than that,
you die.
I have never heard of anyone having this problem
in the
20th or 21st centuries.
I mean, it just cracked the tooth. It didn't break it, but it caused sensitivity and things. So
I just love the casualness where I'm eating beans and, you know, when they're from dry, sometimes you're going to get rocks in them. And, you know, sometimes, we've all been there.
We've all been there.
You know, eating rocks accidentally. Hey, there's a rock in these beans. You know, when we got to work up our strength to go pan for gold.
Oh, no, you can get them in cans. And when you're
what?
Prospecting. Sure.
Okay.
Get them in cans.
I thought you meant there were rocks in cans of beans. No, that was weird.
No, the hobos get it in cans. They don't get dry beans.
But yeah, I was listening to an episode.
You know that, though, right? When you're preparing beans from
I absolutely do not.
Oh, yeah. You have to sift them out, clean them, and make sure there's no rocks in there.
I very much do not live a lifestyle where this kind of information comes to me via experience or conversation until fucking now. So thanks for that. I'm going to reevaluate everything.
All right.
I don't think I've ever prepared dry beans. I do think I have eaten beans that had started out dry. Nobody warned me about any fucking rocks. Now I'm a little pissed at those people. Didn't even know that was an option. I'm not that big a fan of beans. Like, I don't know that I'm willing to risk. Next time I go to Poncheros, I'll be like, motherfucker, black or pinto, which one is least likely to give me a rock?
It's not the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Because when I was, there's a place in Iowa, I'm not going to tell you where it is, but there's a place over here in Iowa City. I went to this place and they had a concession stand and you could buy stuff. Like, and one of the things you could buy was potato salad. So I bought some potato salad and I was eating that and there was a big chunk of glass in there that cut my tongue open.
Jesus!
And that was pretty awful.
No wonder you're not that into food. Holy shit!
That's probably the worst thing that ever happened.
Are you the one kid that got Halloween candy with razor blades in it that started the urban legend?
Started the whole thing right here.
Oh! Glass in the potato. No, I just love the idea that in any conversation about anything, you can rejoinder with, it's not the worst thing that's happened to me. And everybody's like, ooh, do tell.
Well, I just did. Glass in the potato
That's
salad.
That's the worst thing that happened to you? That's not it's the worst thing that happened to you on this podcast.
It's worse than The Rock is what I'm saying.
It is worse than The Rock. It is. Yeah. I will grant you it is worse than The Rock.
And it, you know, food. Something yes, in food yes. that's not supposed to be there.
You know. So. I don't know. Wasp in the funnel cake batter. But
yeah, but I didn't eat that. I made that.
For somebody else to eat.
Yeah. I made
it's not.
That.
It's not the worst thing I've done. Nah, no wonder you're not as big into food. It's trying to fucking kill you. No, I was listening to an episode of the Off Menu podcast, and they had come to LA, and they were actually interviewing Paul F. Tompkins, and he didn't know them, but he had a thing to shill, so he was there, and. James Acaster really enjoys banter. And of course, Paul F. Tompkins is made of banter. So they had lots of bits going back and forth. And they quickly got into this thing where, because of some of the choices he'd made, it basically became this thing where he was this character of like a 19th century coal miner. And they were talking because he was already a lot of stuff that they sort of tied into that. And then at one point they said something about, you know, you put that in your bindle. And he's like, wait, what? Now I'm a hobo? What are you doing to me here? And then they talked about bindles for a while. And anytime I hear about hobos, I think of you.
Good. That makes me happy.
Because nobody I know cares as much about hobos as you. If there's ever a need for like a social movement that's like, you know, for the hobos. Your spokesman right there. That's the guy.
Yep. Hobo convention right here in Iowa. I think they still have it up in Britt.
It's probably hard to advertise. They probably don't have a webpage. Fuck. What am I saying? They almost certainly do. Oh my God. Yeah. Look. Okay. It's going to be a while before we do another one of these. Cause we're ahead and all that. So your homework in the meantime is do some research and find out if there are hobo apps, because I bet you there are fucking hobo apps.
That would be awesome.
I'll bet you they exist. Find out. That's your homework.
I mean, you know, hobos used to
go on vacation.
Hobos used to find surfaces, you know.
Yeah, porch, yeah.
And light poles.
Do the marks. Yeah.
Put little marks in so people would know, oh yeah, this is a good town.
I believe it was called TripAdvisor. Back in the day, so
if you know, if they can get their hands on phones, that's even better.
I'll bet you. You look into it. I'll bet you they are out there.
Of course, a lot of modern hobos aren't really migrant workers who are looking for food wherever they go. I mean, they're
itinerant actors in musical theater.
They're hobby hobos.
Hobos. Hobies.
It's a hobby for them to hobo. So they're just riding. They're just illegally riding trains and stuff. They're not.
They're actually just 6-inch sad clown figurines.
Yeah.
Hobby hobos.
Well, but even if they were doing migrant work, nobody knocks on someone's door and says, hey, you know.
Nobody gets to paint somebody's fence for a plate of Blintzes anymore. Yeah.
I don't think that happens anymore. No, not really anywhere.
I mean, given the roofers I hired, it was close to that, but I did pay them in actual cash.
Okay. Well, see that. Yeah.
Check.
It's not like it was. It's not like it was.
More's the pity. I was going to make a joke about having a hobo collection, thinking of the little figurines. And then I just imagined a bunch of transients chained up in the basement. And it was a different joke. I decided not to go for it.
Yeah, that took a dark turn.
It did. It did.
You even have a basement? You don't have a basement, do you?
Not that the law knows about. For legal reasons, I have no basement. It's considered a beach house in Rhode Island. All right, do an email. We got
this. Oh, I get to do it.
Yeah, I did the last one.
Oh boy.
That's how this works. Except when I forget.
Beth wants to know.
Beth.
This question is primarily for William. Oh, that's nice.
Cool. I'm going to take a nap.
Where in Phoenix did you stay for your class? Was it the Baltimore? No, it was the Arizona
Grand. That's a different state. That's in Maryland.
It was the Arizona Grand Resort in Phoenix. That the it was quite a distance from the hotel, it seemed to me. But, I mean, I think it was still in Phoenix. If so.
Wait. The place you stayed was a long way from the hotel?
I'm sorry. Did I say that? A long way from the airport.
It was, all right. There we go.
Yeah.
I thought we were doing a thing where the conference was in a different center. And that was, but no, this makes way less sense and therefore more sense now that you've corrected it.
Shut up. It seemed like we drove forever out of the airport. And it's like, I mean, if I had landed in Des Moines and rode that long to wherever I was going, it wouldn't still be in Des Moines. But anyway, but it was still
well, pretty sure. William measures a great deal of distances based around Des Moines city limits.
Yeah.
It was like three Des Moines.
It was one and a half, maybe.
It was a Des Moines and a West Des Moines.
Yeah, you got it. There you go.
I hate that I do, but yes, I understand. I really am not comfortable with that, but I do get it.
Anywho. Okay, was it the Baltimore?
Is there
no.
more to that question?
Then she says, sorry. If so, and since it wasn't, I'm not.
We skipped that. Sure. Go to line 30.
She said, did you enjoy a tequila sunrise, which originated at Wright Bar in Baltimore?
The
is that a drink?
Beth, what the hell? On behalf of William, how very dare you? The okay. man is known for almost nothing. I frequently have to remind myself who he is when we start this podcast. But if we know one fucking thing about him, and I do mean we only know one thing, man does not drink alcohol, never has, never will. The man is the 7-Up of alcohol.
Human beings?
All right, that didn't work. What anyway. Are you saying? This question is for me. No, he fucking didn't. And shame on you for not knowing that. Now, that it's being right. said, did you it's drink okay. something called like a club soda sunrise?
No, I had a lot of dad's root beer there. Because that's what the hotels serve for root beer dads. It's good.
Absolutely. By the way, I like the Hy-Vee near us has fucking 12 packs of 1919 right now. If you want to come snag that. I saw a bunch. Yeah. Cans of it. Yeah. They like had a, you know, those things where in the middle of the grocery store, they like build forts out of
yeah
12 packs. It's like one of those of 1919. So you should get that.
I'm going to have to say something to Abby about that. Anyway. So did you see the Catalina pool where Marilyn Monroe sunbathed and Irving Berlin allegedly composed White Christmas while sitting poolside? Is all this stuff at the Baltimore? Is that what I'm getting from?
I just can't cope with how much Beth has no idea who you are.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the Irving Berlin is the closest I could think to something you would possibly give a shit.
I might have seen the pool. Might have.
Did you see a pool while you were in Phoenix?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Maybe was anybody composing or being Marilyn Monroe by it?
No. There's a very good chance I wouldn't, even if I stayed at this place, that I wouldn't have known about this thing. Had I known about it, I probably would have gone to just see it to say, hey, I saw that pool. But
yeah.
Also, it would be weird. Here's the thing. When you're not going to a pool to swim in it, it's pretty weird for you to go there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't usually do that.
If I didn't know you and I was in the pool and you did that, I would be contacting the front desk.
And I just showed up and just stood there looking. And someone said, sir, what are you doing here? You're clearly not here to swim. You've got a jacket like, on. And
but
oh, well, Marilyn Monroe.
No, here's how you fake out on it. You go down. Oh, this is might be tricky for you. You got to wear shorts. So that could be a problem. So it looks like you might be going to swim. And then you dip one foot in and you go, ah, and then you leave. So it seems like it was too cold and you wimped out. And while that's still weird, it's way less weird than just stand there just like
See, done. Did you get to appreciate any part of the history of the hotel even if you didn't get to use the spa, etc.? I presume that the Grand Arizona had some kind of history. I'm not aware of any of it. No, I didn't get a chance to learn anything interesting about
it. In the sense that it didn't open the day I arrived.
I mean, it didn't look particularly like old or something, I mean, it could have, you know, it could be, I don't know how old it was. I didn't learn anything about it at all in terms of it having any kind of storied past or anything.
Ugh, I'm so angry at Beth.
So then she says, if not, that was all the if so.
Did you drink a gallon of gin at whatever place you were hanging out in? And
if
did
not,
you go stare at people at the pool with binoculars?
There was a pool right outside my room.
And did you learn anything about the future of your hotel?
I mean, right out, like, people were in the pool at all nights and I could hear them. If I walked 10 feet out my door, I would be in the pool. That's how
I think you are the first person to have survived not getting in a pool while spending more than 12 hours in Arizona, if I'm honest.
Hey, we should call the world record people and see if that's not
absolutely
true. So she says, if not, what lame place did you stay? Which I've already said. What interesting things did that hotel advertise that you didn't get to do? Well, I don't know, because I booked at that resort because that's where the thing was and that's where the special rate was. I did no research on it at all. The college
Which
told
is
me this
surprising because you know what they say about really Willie Wright. He all about dem amenities. He all about, but how many rooftop bars you got? Tell me about all those deep tissue massages I could be getting.
So I heard people talk about, I heard the complaint was put forth to, so like during the class, we had a couple high ranking people from the college and from the university and from the dean of our college basically came to talk to us and wanted some feedback. And some people said, look, you know, yeah, we got a reduced rate and everything, group rate or whatever, but we did pay for, you know, to be at this spa or whatever. And you'd think we would be able to do some things, but I never even heard what those things were.
Of course you didn't.
So, I mean, here's what I know that I picked up from just what other people said. There was a water slide there.
One bed.
There was a water slide there.
All right.
I think there was a 9-hole golf course. Like, I think. And there was a like an actual spa that does the things that spas are supposed to do. But I admit I don't know what spas do.
Precisely.
I mean,
my theory is Beth either wrote this after having several tequila sunrises herself, or she wrote this email to someone else entirely and then went back and did a find and replace for William and Arizona, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, everything there was insane. Everything there was a complete surprise to me. It was a surprise to me that it was like a campus. Like my hotel room was in a building and there was another building and another building. And, you know, the lobby was a quarter mile walk away and the whole spa aspect. I mean, I kind of knew about that because that's in the name of the place, but I didn't really think
but
about it.
You don't know
I
what
a
spa
there.
Is. It's, yeah, no. And I,
not really.
And no one should try and make you. Anybody who knows you well enough knows that it could break your fragile psyche to get down and deep into what the hell spa. I mean, I can barely cope with it and I engage in the activities. It's no.
But nothing I heard of was anything that I would have. I mean, water slide? No. I don't know what people do in a spa, but what I the few things I do know from like movies and TV or whatever, it involves like massage and maybe not having all your clothes on. Things
like that. Yeah.
Not interested.
It involves nudity and fucking homeopathy. All your favorites.
Yeah. And golf. I don't play golf. So it's like, I didn't care about any of that stuff. Some people did. And I think that was right for them. You know, if they're interested in it, I think that's right that they should have had a chance to do those things, but nothing.
I do feel like me. For your personal edification, I should tell you a tequila sunrise is a particular kind of drink. It is tequila mixed with orange juice. And then it is, in my experience, at least topped with grenadine. But not mixed in. So that there's a red sort of layer on the top that slowly sort of sinks in. So it makes a very picturesque look in the glass.
Oh.
Hence the name.
Have I ever told you that Abby and I sometimes have non-alcoholic Moscow mules?
Mocktails? No, but I'll bet that's tasty. Ginger beer and lime juice?
Yeah, in a copper mug or whatever. We call them Methodist mules.
I like
Methodist mules.
Dark and They're stormy good. Might be my favorite of that category. Although I do like a Kentucky mule as well. I'm kind of a bourbon guy when I drink, which is almost never. The one person I drank with most often is now sober. And so I don't drink with them anymore. And when I'm with them, I'm nice enough not to drink.
If anyone decides that, you know, maybe you'd like, you would enjoy a Moscow mule minus the alcohol, and you want to call it a Methodist mule, which I recommend. I also recommend using ginger ale that's like extra spicy, because I think.
Well, ginger beer, not ginger ale. Ginger beer. But yes. Yeah, no, do it with some good shit, like a Reed's or something. Yeah.
Reed's. I think the spicier it is, the better in it. I think it might get a little, it's not going to replicate, obviously, but it might get closer to the warm feeling you get from the alcohol when you
drink it. Well, I'm trying to think if there's anything to add that gives that sort of rum flavor. So, okay, you've been to a Baskin Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
In your experiences of Baskin Robbins, what is your favorite Baskin Robbins flavor of ice cream?
Well, Baskin Robbins,
they're making new ones all the time.
Yeah, they did have a pretty good rocky road, as I recall. And I think if I was going to get something that had a lot of stuff in it, it would usually be that. But, you know, naturally, boring old me, I'd almost always get like just a chocolate or vanilla, strawberry sometimes. I wouldn't get fancy flavors usually, but Rocky Road.
Fancy, like the Depression era invention, Rocky Road ice cream.
As fancy
too
to me.
Fancy for our boy. My favorite is, and always has been since I was a small child, Daiquiri Ice. And Daiquiri Ice is essentially lime sorbet with rum flavoring in it. And many people hate it. And as a child, I of course should hate it because it has rum flavoring. I fucking love that stuff. I just recently watched somebody tasting all the flavors from Baskin Robbins, and they tried the Daiquiri Ice, and it was one of their least favorites, maybe their least favorite. They were really grossed out by it. I love that stuff. So whatever they put in there, stick that in with the ginger beer and the lime juice, and then you're there. Do you just use lime juice, or do you use like a lime aid?
Well, we get at just. Because we actually use lemon or lime, we're both in cooking a lot. So we'll get that concentrated, you know.
Yeah, us too.
So yeah, we really like it. When the daughter was here, we gave her a Methodist mule, and you know, when she was doing culinary school and stuff, there was a mixology class or whatever. So she knows what a lot of these drinks have in them and what they taste like and whatever. And I said, I don't know. I said, of course, I have no idea how different this is from a Moscow mule. And she said, it's not that different. And part of it was because we used such a spicy
Yeah.
Ginger.
It's not ginger ale flavor. It's ginger. You want strong ginger flavor and strong lime. Mm-hmm. It's a great combination. Mocktails in general are becoming more in fashion lately, and I'm in favor of it because I think it's a neat thing, but I don't think people should have to drink alcohol to enjoy those.
I don't. I think other than the Methodist mules we make, I don't think I've ever had a mocktail.
Oh, there's tons of them. I mean,
oh, back I know, in the day, but I've never,
you
never
just
had
have them. Ones that was like, take a cocktail, leave out the booze. But nowadays, right. They have their own inventions and stuff.
Oh, really? Really cool. I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look up mocktails and you get all sorts of fun stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, I've been to places that had them and I just was never interested.
This friend that recently became sober, there were reasons for it, but it's particularly difficult for them because they were not a big drinker in terms of quantity, but they would do a lot of like wine tastings and going out with friends and having cocktails and things like that and learning different recipes. So they are supplanting a lot of that with all these very creative mixologist things that don't involve alcohol.
Well, and I think that's really an interesting, neat. I think that's an interesting thing that, you know, mixology is really interesting and it's not really about alcohol. I mean, alcohol is almost always involved, but you can mix lots of things and it can be
especially
interesting. And, you know,
in that context, the alcohol is just another flavor. Because
if
you want to get drunk, we've invented plenty of simple things that taste just fine that will do that.
Right.
A lot of them are just two ingredient things.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
We did watch. So we watched a video from Dry Guys where they were going through all of the mainstream hard seltzers out there because that is the current fad.
Mm.
Is every company is making a hard seltzer. And I have experience with some of them and I don't particularly like them because they all just taste like what I associate with malt liquor. All of those, like, you know, it's a cocktail in a bottle. Like, no, those all just are like, we took malt liquor and then we put some artificial flavorings in it. The end. But they particularly got obsessed with this one called Press that they're like, it really tastes like seltzer with juice or whatever. So I got some. And I will say, if you're in the mood for hard seltzer, it's pretty good. I don't like seltzer. So I'm like, yeah, this is really good for a hard seltzer. I'm still not sure why I bought it. But if you are interested in those things, check out Press. You can get them at the store. It's a lot better than some of the scary ones. And in the general consensus was, if it's a beer company that has now come out with a hard seltzer, it's not a very good hard seltzer. So don't do that.
Okay.
That always makes me very sad, the commercials that are like, we now have a beer with less carbs or whatever. And I'm like, if you have such a need to drink beer that you have to get carb conscious about it, look at your situation. Like, we're either talking about quantities or a level of desperation that is not like, it's not so good.
Are we just pulling one today?
I mean, as opposed to the days where we pull zero.
Okay, good.
It's been a fucking minute since we pulled two.
I know.
No, I thought we were going to, but then we got into cocktails and things.
Okay.
So. No, we're not. If you know some good mocktails, send us the recipe on the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Also, work with me to help shame Beth. It'll be really fun because she won't see it for a few weeks because he's a few episodes behind. So she'll catch up and be like, ah, so much Beth hate. But seriously, what is wrong with you, Beth? Asking him if he went to spas. Actually, look at that email again. She did have the good sense to know you wouldn't have indulged in the spa, I think. Doesn't it say?
I
even if
it,
you
I
don't. You had one job.
I thought we were done. You said we were done.
No, I said we weren't pulling a second question.
Oh.
We're never done. You're going to turn this off. You're going to sit in that fucking chair for a week and a half.
My French teacher would say,
Stephanie.
She had her dad was English. And sometimes she'd say she was done with something. And he would say, a turkey is done. You are finished. So she would always say that to us if we said we were done with something.
Brilliant, finished. Brilliant veteran character actor, Jean Smart. Some of us, good people of us, know her first playing the sweet and earnest, but a bit naive secretary on Designing Women. And there was a time where she told a story about somebody, I think in her family, going to visit someone up on the Eastern Seaboard and up north and meeting people and saying, so where are y'all from? And the woman she was talking to said, we're from a place where we don't end our sentences with prepositions. And so she said, oh, I'm sorry. Where are y'all from, bitch? To be fair, I don't think that's the origin of that joke. I'd heard it before, but that's what I always think of.
Oh, man.
That being said, I do get a little caught up in the less versus fewer thing.
Or farther and further? Right. Do you ever get caught up in that one?
No, because I can't keep that one straight.
Yeah,
I live in a constant state of intense anxiety over the few circumstances where you use effect instead of affect that aren't obvious, because there is a secondary use of effect that I have never quite been able to figure out. And I'm always worried whenever I'm constantly correcting people that it's the one and they're going to be like, no, you're wrong. And I'll be like, no. And I'll shrink and melt.
Wow.
The curse will be broken and I'll have turned back into a snail.
Back into a snail.
It's a long story and we don't have time, but yes.
Okay, maybe next time.
Congratulations on nailing the title this week, though. Come on, guess.
I don't know.
Hobby Hobos.
Oh, didn't know. Didn't
you? You don't have the tuned sense that I do. You hear an episode title, you know it. Or I do. This is one. When I hear an episode title, I know it. Like, you could just say random words now, and I would know which collection of them was an actual title. But yeah, Hobby Hobos is the way. So, well done. Because I don't think any of the portmanteaus held together. I thought about when we were talking about portmanteaus, I was listening to something recently and somebody was talking about, yeah. And so, yeah, there's Brock's locker. And somebody said, his Brocker, if you will. I was like, those are the kind of portmanteaus William does.
Yep.
All right. Go to aethertheater.com. Check out all the William shit. He has a lot of shit there. It's good. Go to smashwords.com and look up Odd Wings. I have one shit, but it's a good shit. Yeah, that got away
from me. That didn't sound good at all.
No, it didn't. I wanted them to pair, but yeah. What is that? Like, when it's a broader thing, William's got a lot of shit, it doesn't sound scatological. When I'm like, I just have one shit, it's like, he's genuinely sending us to get a turd off of a website. It's not a turd. It's a book, and it's a good book. Craig says. William stuff turds, whatever. But and listen, next week, in theory, next week will actually be when we think it is.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com.